Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan, Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66, WFAN and WFAN FM, New York.
Well, hey, good morning, and welcome to Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori on this Sunday morning, June 28th. Nothing like a little train to wake us up on an early Sunday. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. This year's Travelers Championship is a TV-only event. You can catch all of the final round action this afternoon on CBS. Learn more at TravelersChampionship.com. Well, hope you're having a great weekend so far, getting out to hit some balls, perhaps on your way to play some golf. Last week when I was still in Florida, I was invited to play the Black Horse at Stream Song. It's a Gil Hands design. I loved every minute of it. So much fun. Stream Song has three links-like courses, and they're all situated in the center of the state. It's about a 2.5-hour drive south of Orlando. And if you're in Tampa, it's about 1 hour drive from Tampa. So actually a little closer to Tampa. And it's definitely worth the drive. I mean, there's three courses. They have the blue and red courses. They're actually closed until October as they're changing the greens, but the black course is open, and you know, it's great to have a links-like golf experience in the heart of Florida where it's sunny and warm for the most part. And the resort, it's nice, the culinary, very, very good food, so I would recommend it. They have a spa. It wasn't opened, and you know, all the employers were wearing masks. And it's just like all golf resorts and facilities. They're very diligent about being safe and careful. So it was a really good experience. And wanted to remind you that my 22nd annual Ann Liguori Foundation Charity Golf Classic to benefit cancer research, we've moved the tournament to Thursday, October 8th. At Maidstone Golf Club in East Hampton. So it was originally scheduled for this past Thursday. And oh my goodness, what a gorgeous day it was this past Thursday. But hopefully we'll have a lovely day in October. And you can get all the details about the charity outing at annliguori.com/charitygolf. Hope you can join us. Well, this morning, we are going to check in with Ken Bentley, who is the co-founder and CEO of the APGA Tour and Advocates Foundation. The Advocates Pro Golf Association's mission is to bring greater diversity to the sport by developing African Americans and other minorities for a variety of careers in golf. Now, the APGA has grown from 3 events in its first year to 8 events this year, with over $250,000 in prize money. And the nonprofit organization does more than sponsor professional golf tournaments. Every event offers health and wellness and career fairs. They sponsor diversity symposiums where leaders of the minority golf community gather to discuss ways to best introduce diversity at all levels of the game. And it's fascinating what they're doing. So I think you'll find my conversation with Ken Bentley very interesting. And then keeping on the subject of tours that provide more opportunities for more players, Len Matisse, who's a 2-time winner on the PGA Tour, and he's originally from Long Island, He recently put together a tour called the Matisse Golf Tour, powered by IBM. It's a mini tour of sorts, which welcomes all professionals, male and female, includes amateur players with a 5 handicap or better, and professionals. And Len and his brothers, Ken and Bob, put this tour together, you know, to give more players an opportunity to compete for prize money. There are a lot of very good players out there who don't have the opportunities to compete on the PGA Tour or the Korn Ferry Tour. So this is another opportunity where they can go and test the competition out there and earn some prize money. So we'll talk to Len Matisse at about 7:40 on just another opportunity for professionals and amateurs to compete for prize money. All right, well, the Travelers Championship, the final round is this afternoon, and I have to say that having been at this tournament every year for many, many, many years, you know, to watch it on TV and not see the spectators, you know, the galleries that usually gather around the last four holes and all over the course, all the festivities that normally go on, it's very strange, really. But nonetheless, golf plays on, and we've seen some very low scores coming out of the Travelers, and the question has become, really, how low can the players go? There have been birdie barrages on the TPC River Highlands course, and tee times yesterday were pushed up to get everyone on the course and finished before the bad weather came in the afternoon, which turned out to be a very good idea. I know we had storms out here on the east end of Long Island, and the storms were in Connecticut in the afternoon, and so yesterday and early afternoon, the scores continued to go low. Brendan Todd from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, he shot a 9-under-61, a career low for him. And at 18-under, Todd has a 2-shot lead over Dustin Johnson. Brendan Todd looking to become the first guy to win 3 times this season. He won the Bermuda Championship and the Mayakoba Golf Classic in back-to-back starts earlier this season. He had 14 of 14 fairways for the second straight round. Talk about accuracy and consistency. Good for him. And he was a putting machine yesterday. He drained 5 putts over 10 feet. And so if he continues to play like that, he's going to be tough to beat. Then you have Dustin Johnson. He posted a career low, a 61 as well. 9 birdies, no bogeys. DJ, he will turn 36 years old on Monday. He's hoping to win his 21st PGA Tour title, his first in 16 months since he won the WBC Mexico Championship in February of 2019. You have Kevin Streelman within 3 shots of the lead. He shot a 63 yesterday. He won the Travelers back in 2014. Mackenzie Hughes, he shot a 68. And at 14-under, he's 4 shots behind Brendan Todd. Bryson DeChambeau shot a 65. All these low scores. 13-under overall, he's 5 shots back. And Bryson, as you know, he's all bulked up, at least 20 pounds heavier. And he's been averaging approximately 323 yards off the tee. Averaging. Which is unbelievable. Phil Mickelson turned the big 5-0 last week. Phil was the leader after 36 holes up at the Travelers after carding that 7-under-63 on Friday. Yesterday, he shot a +171, and that puts him 6 shots behind the leader. So let's see how Phil does today. We're always rooting for Phil. And apparently, he has trademarked the phrase he often tweets, hit bombs. And the trademark application lists golf shirts and golf caps and hats on the application. So Phil is hitting bombs, and now he's going to try to capitalize on it with perhaps a line of products with those words on it. So good idea, Phil Mickelson. He will get started at 1:15 this afternoon and will play with Charlie Hoffman. John Rahm is 8 shots back and needs to either win this or for Rory McIlroy to finish tied for 3rd or worse to take over the number 1 ranking from Rory McIlroy. Rory shot a 69 yesterday. He's at 10-under, so that puts Rory 8 shots back. Jordan Spieth with back-to-back 69s. He's at 5-under overall, tied for 49th. So we have Brendan Todd and Dustin Johnson. They will be the final pairing, and they get started at 2:05 this afternoon, and it's all on CBS. The week started off a bit rocky, to say the least, with several players withdrawing. Tuesday, Cameron Champ withdrew after testing positive. But interestingly enough, he had three further tests that came back negative. So Cameron Champ said that he has felt great the entire time. He has experienced no symptoms. So after testing positive, which forced him to withdraw, he's had three further tests, and now he's negative. Graham McDowell and Brooks Koepka, they each withdrew early in the week after their caddies tested positive. Chase Koepka, Brooks' younger brother, who qualified to play the Travelers on Monday, he withdrew, even though he and Koepka, his brother Brooks, and Graham McDowell, they all tested negative. On Friday, Danny McCarthy tested positive, so he withdrew. And one of his playing partners, Bud Cauley, withdrew as well, even though he tested negative. And since before the PGA Tour and Korn Ferry Tours restarted, there have been 2,757 tests conducted over 3 weeks with only seven people testing positive. I'd say that's pretty good so far. And everyone needs to continue to adhere to all the protocols and use common sense and wear a mask when in public. But I mean, to think there would be no positive tests is unrealistic. I think the PGA Tour is doing a very good job staying in front of this, testing as much as possible. They're getting quick turnarounds with the results, and they're constantly reminding everyone to adhere to the safety protocols. They have updated a number of their own protocols, including the fact that all players and caddies will need to be tested in advance of approaching the course and complex. Previously, they could be on site to practice as they awaited their arrival testing results, but without access to the indoor facilities until tested. So the tour is taking that precaution one step further in that no player or caddy will be on site anywhere to start the week without first being cleared through their COVID-19 screenings, which is a very good idea. That maybe that's what they would have done originally. All players who take the tour's charter flights will get tested on the Saturday before departure, and now they will also be tested upon arrival at the new venue. Personal coaches and instructors are now going to be tested like the players and caddies, and the tour will also withhold the stipend program if a player tests positive after not following protocols. The tour's fitness truck will be back on site next week, so pros are being discouraged from using local gyms and fitness centers. We forgot to mention Webb Simpson, who won the RBC Heritage at Harbortown last Sunday. He withdrew from the Travelers out of an abundance of caution after a family member tested positive for coronavirus. The latest news with Webb Simpson is that he entered the Rocket Mortgage Classic in Detroit next week after his family got the all clear. So he was just being extra careful. Jason Day, he requested a COVID-19 test prior to playing in yesterday's third round, and his test result came out negative. But he was originally scheduled to play at 8:09 in a threesome yesterday morning, but was reassigned to play as a single as a precautionary measure. So he played all by himself yesterday. He shot a 269, and at 5 under overall, Jason Day is 13 shots back. And all the follow-up tests that were done as a result of potential contact with Danny McCarthy, who withdrew on Friday, were negative. So that's the update on that. And then one last update for you with the U.S. Open, which, as you know, will be at Wingfoot, September 17th through the 20th. We know that the USGA canceled all local and final qualifying tournaments because of the pandemic. This week, the USGA came out with their exemption categories, in which players will be able to earn a place in the field through a number of categories. And in addition to the customary U.S. Open exemptions, the 2020 field will include the top 70 point leaders and ties from the official world golf ranking as of March 15th, instead of the usual top 60. So that means that Phil Mickelson, who was ranked 61 on March 15th, will be exempt, and he will play the U.S. Open. Phil had said a long time ago that if he doesn't automatically qualify, that he would, you know, try to go through the qualifying rounds to try to get in. But Phil got in when the USGA changed their criteria, and now they're including the top 70 players in ties. And there's some other changes. For instance, players who are not already exempt can earn places by their performances in the Memorial, the 3M Open, the WGC FedEx St. Jude Invitational, the Barracuda Championship and Wyndham Championship, as well as the PGA Championship, which is in August. And this year, exemption categories will include the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup final points list, the top five, the Korn Ferry Tour's regular season points and finals, top five in each, the European Tour's UK Swing, which is the top 10 in aggregate points for the first five events, and the PGA Professional Championship, the top three. All right, we are going to take a quick break, come back, and hear all about the APGA Tour with co-founder and CEO Ken Bentley, and then at about 7:40, Len Matisse. Long Island zone. Len Matisse will join us, two-time winner on the PGA Tour, plays on the Champions Tour, and he has organized the Matisse Golf Tour. So all that coming up. Stay where you are. We'll be right back.
This year's Travelers Championship is a TV-only event. We'll miss the fans, but you can catch all the action June 25th through the 28th on the Golf Channel and CBS. Featuring eight of the top 10 players in the world, including Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, and three-time champion Bubba Watson. The tournament has generated nearly $20 million for local charities, and this year's support will include COVID-19 relief efforts. Interested in contributing to tournament charities? Learn more at TravelersChampionship.com.
Ann LaGorry is talking golf on Sunday morning with you, right here on The Fan.
I have the tendency of getting very physical, so watch your step, because if I do, you need...
Welcome, Ken Bentley, co-founder of the Advocates Pro Golf Association Tour and Advocates Foundation. Thanks so much for coming on the show, Ken.
Well, thank you very much. I'm honored to be on the show.
I know the mission of this tour is to bring greater diversity to the sport by developing African Americans and other minorities for a variety of careers in golf. So tell me more about the tour.
Well, we started 11 years ago, and as you said, as a way to get more diversity into golf. We started from just a conversation I had with a friend of mine, Adrian Stills, who had played on the PGA Tour. And I asked him, why weren't there more African-Americans on the tour? And at the time when we had this conversation, it was only Tiger. And so he said that if we could find a way to get guys to have an avenue to compete, we would be able to get more people on the tour. So with that, I went out, raised some money, created a structure, and we started with basically three tournaments. Now we'll have nine tournaments across the country with $250,000 in prize money. Three guys who have played our tour are now on the PGA Tour. And really a goal of ours now is not only to get the guys playing on tour, but provide other job opportunities, because there's so many opportunities in golf outside of playing that we'd like to prepare people for that.
Great. So who is playing on the PGA Tour who went through the APGA Tour?
Harold Varner, Tony Finau, and Joseph Bramlett are guys that played our tour. So those guys are doing well on the PGA Tour, and they played in our tournaments.
That's awesome. I mean, Harold Varner III, he has been very vocal about improving diversity in golf. He released a statement a couple weeks ago that really, I thought, came from the heart and was very moving and powerful, Ken. And he did great at, you know, the Charles Schwab Challenge, the first PGA Tour back when they resumed the schedule. And what do you think his impact as one of, you know, three black players on the PGA Tour will be at this point? I mean, he is playing well, and he seems to be very committed to speaking out and really doing all he can to improve diversity in golf.
Well, I think it's going to mean a lot. I think the better he does, the more impact it'll have. And he's playing well. And Joseph Bramlett that same week came in second in a Korn Ferry Tour event.
Oh, great.
So, and Cameron Champ has done well. He's won He's only been on tour for 2 years, and he's already won twice. So I think there's a lot of talent, and these guys really seem committed to growing the game. Cameron Champ, actually, when he was in L.A., went out to Compton. Outside of the media, just went over to Compton and did a clinic at their par 3 course there for a number of African-American kids. So I think all three of these guys are really committed to growing the game, and to see them doing well will inspire a whole nother generation, just like Tiger did.
And as you say, you know, it's more than just competing, training for the, you know, for the PGA Tour, if they can, if, you know, you can qualify for that. You know, golf is really a lifestyle, and golf is full of business opportunities and networking opportunities. And so the APGA Tour, how does the APGA really prepare players for, you know, for the business of golf per se?
Well, we hold sessions with the guys about, you know, how to do resumes. We talk to them about careers. It's a tough conversation for a lot of our guys because they're so focused on playing.
Sure.
But we talk to them about life after golf. Like, a favorite story I had is that I heard Magic Johnson speak. He came to Nestle. I used to work for Nestle, and he came to Nestle to speak. And he said the first day he set foot on campus at Michigan State, he went to the dean of the business school and said, you know, I want to prepare for when my career is over. And that's what I tell our guys. One day, you know, you're not going to, even if you make it to the PGA Tour, one day all that's going to end, and you want to prepare for that. And so we try and get the guys to think about that. We're also focused on younger kids. We hold clinics for kids. We talk to them about careers, and we give them golf lessons. We introduce the game to them. We're going to have a Black College tournament, the APGA Tour Black College Classic, in October. And part of the classic is that we're bringing in recruiters from the companies that sponsor us, and they're actually going to interview those college players. So we'll be talking to them about how to interview before they actually do it. But it's a great opportunity for these guys, most of which won't even play on the APGA Tour. So when their college careers end, they're going to go right to a career. And we think they'd be great for golf. And that's why we're bringing in recruiters to talk to them.
That's wonderful. Well, diversity in golf has been a big issue through the years, and particularly during these last few weeks, attention on diversity is under the microscope. Do you think golf is doing enough in this area?
Well, the short answer is they could do a lot more. And I think that they are looking to do more. I've had meetings with the PGA Tour, and the PGA Tour actually has been a sponsor of ours since 2012. So they got on with us early on when we were just in our infancy stage and really gave us a lot of credibility. But they've had conversations with myself and other people about how they can now step up their game to make sure that they can really accelerate the pace to develop African-Americans for the tour. And they are really interested in developing African-Americans, other minorities, for other careers. Because if you think about it, there's tournament directors, there are marketing people, sales people, and all the thousands of people that it takes to put on a golf tournament and to run an organization like the PGA Tour. So there's great opportunities in golf. And so we want to make sure that our guys are able to take advantage of some of those opportunities.
I know you're on the board of Tiger Woods Foundation, TGR, most impressive foundation, which empowers students to pursue their passions through education. Talk a little bit about Tiger. Has he been able to help your tour?
Well, yes, he has in some ways. The tournament in Los Angeles, the Genesis tournament for the PGA Tour, Tiger's Foundation owns that tournament. And they give a Charlie Sifford exemption every year, which goes to a minority player who shows a lot of promise. And the great majority of the players that have gotten that award have come through our association, our APGA Tour. So we have a partnership with them that our Player of the Year is a finalist for that award. So that's been the main partnership we have. But I think Tiger has done so much for education, and it's amazing being on the foundation board and seeing firsthand what the foundation does for education. I mean, and Tiger is at every single board meeting. He knows every one of the scholars. He's intimately involved in the strategy of the organization, the direction. I mean, it's incredible to see him at every single board meeting. Even when he was going through his back problems and many surgeries, he still participated in every board meeting, even if it was on the phone. So I got to give him, I mean, he's basically decided that education is his way to give back. And he's done a tremendous job in that.
Absolutely. I know the programs there foster a growth mindset, instilling in students the strength and skills to persevere and to find their own path. And education is the key. And it's so important that, you know, he's, you know, lent his platform and influence in that way. Now, you know, he tweeted out a short statement in the last couple of weeks about the tragedy of George Floyd, yet he was criticized by various Black athletes and broadcasters for not taking a stronger stance. I was wondering, Ken, what your thoughts are about, you know, Black athletes, particularly superstar athletes like a Tiger, using their platforms for change.
Well, I actually love it. I mean, if you look at LeBron James, to me, he's the classic role model for athletes. He started his school in Akron, which he totally funds. You know, he speaks his mind on issues. But I think it really is an individual thing. I was friends with Arthur Ashe. I was a tennis player growing up. And we used to spend a lot of time talking about that. And I was a kid. I was really young then. But, you know, he really talked to me a lot about how important it was to use whatever platform I had for social change. So I, from a young age, that was my orientation. But I do think that each individual athlete has to decide what's best for him or her. And LeBron James has decided, you know, he wants to be front and center and be part of change. I think Tiger has decided that he wants education to be the platform that he uses. So,
right.
You know, I respect, you know, all athletes, and they do it the way that makes them feel comfortable.
Right. And you can't win, right? You can't please everybody, yeah. Right?
No, you can't. And you can't please everybody.
You have that kind of influence and that kind of platform, you know, you're going to rub feathers either way. And what's the secret to your success story? I mean, you've had a tremendous career. You, as you said, you were a retired executive at Nestle's USA, and you're on the board of the Tiger Woods Foundation, the Southern California Tennis Association. I could go on and on. You've had, you know, many influential, you know, positions. And now with this APGA Tour and the Advocates Foundation, you're doing great work.
Well, thank you. It's been a passion of mine from a young age. My parents were all involved in community service. And as I mentioned, I was fortunate enough to meet Arthur Ashe at a young age. And so I had a bunch of role models that were involved in the community. And so I kind of always felt like if there was going to be a change, then I had to take it upon myself to be part of that change. So I've always wanted to get involved. And I think that the main reason I've had any sort of success is I've had a lot of people support me. And that's why it's so important to have role models for young people. The Tiger Woods Foundation, they provide each one of their scholarship winners with a role model and a mentor. And I think it's just so important that kids have role models. And you talk about going back to DeVarner and Cameron Champ and Joseph Bramlett, with those guys being out front and on TV, I think they'll be tremendous role models for kids and really make our work a lot easier, because they'll get a lot of kids wanting to play golf and wanting to be like those guys.
Sure. And through the years, I had the opportunity to interview the great Arthur Ashe, Ken, and Jim Brown. I've had many interviews with Jim Brown, who, you know, has really been a civil rights activist for as long as I've known him. I've had the opportunity to interview Tiger, Michael Jordan. I mean, these are inspiring, you know, just star athletes who can really make a difference.
Right. Yeah, and they have in their own way. I mean, Jim Brown, to do what he did a long time ago was amazing. I mean, Jim quit playing football at his peak. And
that's right. Only 9 years.
He was one of the first athletes to speak out. You know, Jim really kind of set the standard. Then you got Muhammad Ali and Arthur Ashe was just my hero as a tennis player, because he really was outspoken on South Africa. I remember when Nelson Mandela first got out of prison, the first person he asked to meet was Arthur Ashe, because Ashe was the first person to play in an integrated, before an integrated audience. So that's the kind of influence he had. If Nelson Mandela could meet anybody in the world that he wanted to, he was world famous, the one guy he wanted to meet was Arthur Ashe. And that shows you the power of sport and the power that athletes have. Because it wasn't the President of the United States that he wanted to meet. It was Arthur Ashe.
Right.
So I do think athletes have tremendous power.
Absolutely. And you, talking about Jim Brown, I remember when he started the American program, teaching life management skills to gang members. And he invited me to actually sit in one of his sessions in his home in the Hollywood Hills, you know, where the members of the Crips and the Bloods were there, and he was the mediator. And it was just unbelievable to watch, you know, him, you know, try to talk peace and educate these guys. So, it's just unbelievable to watch, you know, some of these athletes and what they can do with their platforms. So, and you mentioned Charlie Sifford. I was so excited that Charlie Sifford used to teach golf, you know, after he retired from the PGA Tour at the little golf course that I used to play at in Brecksville, Ohio, where I grew up. So I was so honored that Charlie Sifford was there. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Did you meet his son? His son, Charlie Sifford, Junior is involved with our organization. He's really a
nice guy. I heard he went to our high school. I didn't meet him,
is that right?
He's involved with the APGA.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, we started the Charlie Sifford Development Fund, where we try to use funds to help players with their medical expenses or just various life expenses. And Charlie allowed us to use his dad's name. But Charlie's done a lot to keep his dad's name alive. I went to the ceremony when his dad was inducted into the PGA of America Hall of Fame. And Charlie gave a really nice speech there. But I had a chance. I used to be a journalist. And so I had a chance to write a story on Charlie Sifford. And I spent a couple hours with him. He was an amazing guy. The stories he had and the things that he went through. We hear a lot about what Jackie Robinson went through. And Jackie, you know, was just unbelievable what he had to deal with. But just think about being the only African-American at a country club in a venue like that, where they had a white-only clause in the PGA, charter. And here's Charlie Sifford, you know, just trying to make a 5-foot putt with people calling them names and all kinds of stuff. So Charlie is, you know, is a tremendous role model, and somebody that, you know, a lot of our guys, I wish they knew more about Charlie.
Absolutely. I really think we need to be more educated about his incredible life and career and what he had to go through. Ken, thank you so much. I appreciate you coming on the show, and continued success with the APGA Tour and the Advocates Foundation. And you and Adrian Stills, keep up the great work, please.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on and talking a little bit about golf.
This year's Travelers Championship is a TV-only event. We'll miss the fans, but you can catch all the action June 25th through the 28th on the Golf Channel and CBS. Featuring 8 of the top 10 players in the world, including Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, Patrick Reed, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, and 3-time champion Bubba Watson. The tournament has generated nearly $20 million for local charities, and this year's support will include COVID-19 relief efforts. Interested in contributing to tournament charities? Learn more at TravelersChampionship.com.
It's Sunday morning, and you're talking golf with Ann Liguori on The Fan.
Well, welcome back to Talking Golf with Ann Liguori. How you doing this morning? The sun is out. It looks like it could be another gorgeous golf day. Hope you're on your way to the course or about to tee off and get back in time to watch the final round of the Travelers Championship this afternoon on CBS. You have Brendan Todd. He shot a 9 under 61 yesterday, a career low for him. He's at 18 under. He has a 2-shot lead over Dustin Johnson. Johnson also shot a career low, 61. 9 birdies, no bogeys. There's a lot of low scoring going on. So let's see who's going to pull it out. Phil, he had a plus one yesterday. He's 6 shots back. Bryson DeChambeau shot a 65. He's 5 shots back. Len Matisse, who I think played the Travelers a long time ago. Len Matisse, 2-time winner on the PGA Tour. He plays on the Champions Tour and has organized the Matisse Golf Tour. Welcome to Talking Golf, Len Matisse. Glad to have you on the show.
Thank you, Ann. Good to be with you, and it is an exciting day for Travelers. I probably played that event, I think, 10 times when I was on PGA Tour. I loved it because grew up in New York, so, you know, it was always nice to go play in Hartford because, you know, familiar surroundings playing up in that Northeast area.
That's right. You grew up on Long Island, and then you left
I did.
Us
I had,
Florida.
I did. I know. I live in Jacksonville now, Florida, but grew up in New York. So that bent grass, rolling hills, and yeah, TC River Highlands is a unique place because they have the front nine. The front nine holes are kind of flat, prairie type look, and then the back nine it gets really hilly with dog legs and some big lakes. So if people have ever watched that on TV, you've got water on 15, water on 16, water on 17, and then the stadium effect hole on 18. So it's a great place to go play.
It's a lot of fun. A lot of low scores every year. And, you know, it's a course where players, you can really be aggressive. You can score. And it's usually the week after the U.S. Open, Len, as you know. And the players tend to enjoy, you know, the layout in which they can attack the pins and be more aggressive. It's not as penal as say, you know, the U.S. Open conditions with lightning, fast greens or rough as, you know, as high as can be. You know what I'm saying? So they can go out on this course and really score, right?
That's right. Yeah, it's not as severe, and really nothing is as severe as a U.S. Open. So, and usually U.S. Opens are in that kind of the Northeast or Midwest area, so it's a nice, easy travel place to play. I'll tell you, TPC River Highlands is not that easy, and the scores are crazy low. I think the only thing that's jumping out is the greens are soft. So, but still, you know, it's a demanding layout, and for Brendan Todd to be 18 under, Dustin Johnson to be 16 under, it's really crazy. And then, you know, these guys, Mackenzie Hughes shot 60 the first day, 10 under par, you know, right out of the gun to 10 under. So I think anybody like Brendan Todd, 18 under, Dustin Johnson, 16 under, they're leading the way, and they actually have control of the tournament. So if they go out and they shoot a 5 or 6 under, you know, one of them will win. But even like DeChambeau, you said, was 5 back, he can win. You know, look out. Nobody's talking about Kevin Streelman. Kevin Streelman is, even though he's from California, he won there in Hartford.
Yeah, he won there in 2014.
He loves it, so he loves that. He rolled off like 6 birdies to finish to win that event. Things like that can happen. So he's 3 back, and he can easily go out and shoot a 5 or 6 under and win. So even though it's Brendan Todd's lead, you got people like DeChambeau and Kevin Na 5 back that they can actually win shooting a 65 round.
And look at Phil Mickelson. On Friday, he carded a 7-under 63 and was the leader after 36 holes. Yesterday, he shot a +171, which puts him 6 shots back. So, you know, it'll be interesting
to see. It's possible.
It's possible. You can't rule him out, right?
It is. He's 12. Yep, he's 12 under. I mean, I think he shot 63 the first two rounds. Incredible. And you know, so, you know, not his best yesterday, but there again, he could go out and shoot 8 under today. It's possible to do that. And you know, to put a number up on the board, and it might do it. You know, it would be incredible for Phil. You know, 50 years old, he just turned 50, so to have a chance to win, so that's amazing.
How strange is it when you watch, you know, these first couple PGA Tour events, Len, to not see, you know, the galleries? Normally you'd see, you know, just tons of spectators around those water holes you were talking about earlier on the TPC River Highlands course, but, you know, we're watching it on TV, and these guys are just going out and doing their thing, and there's nobody out there but them.
I know. It's. I mean, even like when they played the tournament at Fort Worth Colonial a couple weeks ago, when players go out and play that 10th tee and the first tee and the 9th green, it's all very, you know, very close to the clubhouse, and it's packed with people. And the fact that, you know, no spectators yet, yeah, the players, I mean, it's okay. Like, you know, it's sure the excitement would be there. It would be electric around, especially like that stadium effect with TPC River Highlands, with all the people that gather around 18. But players realize that's the current state right now. And, you know, scoring is, I mean, you know, players are going to play well whether there's a ton of people, some people, or no people. And, but hopefully soon enough, you know, spectators can come and enjoy the amazing golf. The players are ready to go. You know, they're feeling good. They've been working out. They've been practicing their game, and these scores show it.
So, Len, you're playing on the Champions Tour now, and the Champions Tour doesn't resume until, I think, the end of August, right?
Well, yeah, I'm now 52 playing Champions Tour. Our first event back is the Ally Challenge at actually what used to be a tour event at Warwick Hills in Michigan. And that is the last few days in July, a couple of days in August.
Oh, okay.
But there's only one other event in August, and then it doesn't kick back in until September, just because events have canceled on the schedule. So, you know, like, this has been a long break on the Champions Tour. I mean, when everything shut down about mid-March, we won't start back until almost 1st of August, so it's a bunch of months that we haven't competed. But you know, we know that it's a, you know, it's a very, very serious, strange time that we're all in right now.
Well, you've been very busy. You've organized the Matisse Golf Tour with your brothers. So tell us about that.
Yeah, it's been exciting. So my two brothers are professional golfers, and myself with a friend of ours, Rick Eisenbeck, who his company is Leaderboard King. We all got together and said, you know, there might be a demand here in the northern part of Florida for a mini golf tour that, you know, helps players keep playing until they go out and try for that PGA Tour status or Korn Ferry status. So we put this this tour together that we're having events now in June, and we'll have events in July and August for players that, you know, like just out of college, they turn pro and they're like, what can I get in? What can I play in? So we're creating these one-day and two-day events. They put up a few $100s, and we're trying to get 30 or 40 players to come together, not only the pros, but even top amateurs. And because a lot of events have canceled, we're trying to create this place where players can come compete, test their game, and see what they've got. And it's been, you know, it's been a lot of fun. And like, my brothers are pros, I'm a pro, and when we started out, this is exactly where we tried to play, you know. And there's mini tours in Orlando and West Palm Beach, so we're trying to create one in Northern Florida and give players a chance to compete.
So how has the turnout been so far?
Well, it's been light. We've only had, literally, we just started up 3 weeks ago. We had our first event, Marsh Landing Country Club, where we had only 10 players that came and played. But, you know, it's like, it's out here, you know, so we're brand new startup. And the thing that's unique for us is that it's not a money maker for us. We're not making any money on this. We give all the money back. So when players pay to play, we give all the money back. There's a course cost at the clubs, which obviously we try and keep that very low. And the courses have been great. So our next one on the schedule is July 6th at Amelia National, which is it's a great golf course, beautiful place. And Amelia Island's really pretty. And it's only in one day, but that's next on our schedule. And we're looking for 40 or 50 players. So again, top amateurs that want to compete against pros, even ladies. Ladies can play. You know, it's not just guys. Symetra Tour ladies, LPGA ladies, because those events haven't happened yet. So we could actually have ladies compete against guys, against amateurs, all for the top prize.
I love the fact that you have men and women playing together. That is,
yeah,
just,
sure.
To me, it makes so much sense. To me, it's a no-brainer. But
well, yeah,
really,
why not? I mean, you know, the ladies play on about an average of 6,100 yards. So those will be the tees. And the men play roughly 7,000 yards, and everybody teed up and go after it. You know, and that's why the game's so unique, that everybody, you know, we can play against each other at your appropriate tee. And even if you have a handicap, in tournaments you could have a handicap and play against each other. And that's why the game's so great.
And they can test each other against, you know, the low handicap amateurs can test themselves against the pros. And I just love it. You just put everybody in the tournament and see what comes out. Fred Funk was there, right?
That's right.
Fred played in your first event.
That's right. He played in our first event. We had some other Korn Ferry mini tour pros. Fred finished tied for second, and at our first event. And it's a unique thing, you know, where so we're trying to do things a little different. But why not? You know, why not have ladies and men play against each other and tee it up? I mean, that's the beautiful thing about golf. Doesn't matter about your name, what you look like, who you are. You go tee it up, and the score is a score. So we hope to get some traction, in July and August. And at least we're basically putting events out there for people, if it's the right fit for people, to come play and compete and win.
And you have the leaderboard king, the scoring. It's live hole-by-hole scoring, which I think
is that's exciting.
A nice,
I mean, literally, anybody can log on, leaderboard king, and they can actually see the live scoring of hole to hole. So not even just like after nine holes. After every hole, the group enters their score. It's a piece of cake. It's like putting your score down on the scorecard, but you're just putting it on your phone. And then everybody has access to see what's happening that day. So leaderboard kings have been an exciting thing for us. And we like the partnership. And, you know, this will be a great thing for a few months. See how it goes. See if we can get some traction. And then, you know, maybe in the fall time when more pros are around Northern Florida, you know, they'll join in, and who knows, we might have 50, 60, 70 players, and we would love to get ladies involved, too, to compete as well.
You also have the Lamb Matisse Foundation. I know you've raised $500,000 for Jacksonville Charities, with a lot of it going to the First Tee of Jacksonville. So you've been busy, Len. You're doing good work.
Yeah, we love the First Tee. We love the First Tee. It's a great fit. You know, I mean, I remember my brothers and I playing it, like, you know, we were 11, 12, 13 years old. And the First Tee facilities are places for access for juniors that wouldn't normally have access. And the kids are good. They're really good. So we have monthly events for the for those First Tee kids. We connect the First Tee kids with members at other clubs. So we do 9-hole events. These kids come and play. Can you imagine them coming to play like at a TPC River Highlands? They come play with members, and then, you know, they all compete together on teams, and then friendships evolve. First Tee kids meet quality people in the community. And we raise money all along doing that. So that's been something we've been doing for a year and a half, just that program. And we've raised over $30,000 just in 9-hole events. So we're really proud of what we're doing here in Jacksonville.
It's all good, Len Matisse. Continued success. Thanks so much for talking golf with us.
Thank you, Ann. And love to hear your stuff, and keep up the great work.
Hope to see you down in the Sunshine State. You take
Likewise.
Care. Stay safe.
Yeah.
My thanks to Len Matisse, to Ken Bentley with the APGA Tour, to Pete Hoffman in the studio, to Paul Rosenberg during the week. Talking Golf with Ann Liguori is brought to you by Travelers. This year's Travelers Championship is a TV-only event. You can catch all of the final round action this afternoon on CBS. Learn more at TravelersChampionship.com. Be sure to connect with me on social media. Stay tuned for Rick Wolf and the Sports Edge. I will be back next Sunday morning from 7 to 8 with a special edition as the station celebrates its 33rd anniversary. And I've been here since that very first weekend from 1987. Can you believe it? 33 years. Oh, well, I'm only 12. What can I say? I started when I was 12. Hit them straight. Have a great day. And I will talk to you next Sunday morning right here on Talkin' Golf with Ann Liguori.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.